Today's scripture reading is from Ecclesiastes chapter 9, verses 11 through 12. I also saw something else here on earth. The fastest runner does not always win the race. The strongest soldier does not always win the battle. The wisest does not always have food. The smartest does not always become wealthy. And the talented one does not always receive praise. Time and chance happen to everyone. No one knows what will happen next, like a fish caught in a net or a bird caught in a trap. People are trapped by evil when it suddenly falls on them.
I could ask you to stand for the sermon, but I won't do that this morning. There is an outline in the bulletin if that helps you. You can use that. When I finished kindergarten, I'd already decided I was done with school. I did not want to go into the first grade, even though kindergarten was fun, you know, but I decided I didn't really want to go on any further with my education. My mother didn't feel the same way, and so when the first day of first grade came, she sent me, the school was just down the street from us. And so she sent me out of the house, and I walked about halfway down the block and came back. So she sent me out a second time saying, you have to go. So I walked all the way down to the end of the block and then came back. And so finally she walked me down to the end of the street, and so I went up onto the playground, and I waited for the bell to ring, and I watched all the kids go in, and I walked back home. So she ended up having to take me to the classroom and sit me in my seat. And I just cried and cried and cried. I was so disappointed that I had to go to school. And I cried until the teacher slammed her fist on the table and said that was enough. And so I stopped, and the rest is history. But I was just so disappointed that I had to go to school. I didn't want to go to school. Disappointment happens to everyone. Some more than others. When you don't get the job you really wanted, it's disappointing. When you don't pass the exam you had to pass to get your certification, it's disappointing. Megan didn't have that problem this time. She passed hers. We're happy. When you meet the love of your life and you marry him or her, but you find out a couple of years later she wasn't or he wasn't, he didn't think you were the love of his or her life. It's really disappointing. When your children make unwise decisions or choices, it's disappointing. And of course, you know, we could go on and on about all the different disappointments in life. There are more than you can count. Benjamin Franklin once wrote, "Expect the worst, and you will never be disappointed." Now, you could adopt that philosophy. But is that really going to make your life better? Some people are like that. You know, they have this pessimistic or fatalistic attitude toward life. And my question is really that the best way to live your life? You know, is that the best way to deal with the disappointments in your life? The writer of Ecclesiastes has some insight into this because he too, if you've read Ecclesiastes, he lamented over a number of disappointments with life. In fact, you know, quite a few in that book. In Ecclesiastes chapter 2, verse 12 through 17, he struggles with the end result of wisdom and foolishness. He acknowledged in verse 13 that wisdom was better than folly. But in verse 14, he wrote, "I came to realize that the same fate overtakes them both." In verse 16, he wrote, "Neither the wise nor the fool are remembered after they're gone. And like the fool, the wise too must die." And so because of that, he questions the value of being wise. He said, "Why have I been so very wise?" Verse 15. So he hated life. It says he hated life because of this disappointment. Another disappointment the author mentioned, beginning in chapter 2, verse 18, is that all he had earned in life due to his own hard work, he couldn't take with him. He says in verses 18 and 19, I'm going to have to leave everything to someone else when I'm gone, and who knows whether they'll be wise or foolish. They'll have control over all the fruit of my work into which I have devoted so much time and effort and skill. And to him, that was very disappointing. You just can't take it with you, although there has been a few who have tried. A man named Bill knew he was dying, but he didn't care for his children or his relatives. And so he called together his three best friends, a doctor, a priest, and a politician. Guys, he said, I don't want to leave my money to my ungrateful, squabbling children. I'd rather have it buried with me. So I'm giving you each an envelope containing $100,000 in cash. My dying wish is that at my funeral, you will put those envelopes in my coffin. So the three friends agreed to respect the man's wish, and they made a solemn vow that they would do just as he asked them. So 6 months passed, Bill died, and at the funeral the men gathered, and the doctor spoke up first. He said, I have a confession to make. My envelope is not full. He said the hospital needed a new dialysis machine, so I bought it with $25,000 of Bill's money. It is going to save countless lives, and we dedicated a wing of the hospital to his memory, and I think he would want it that way. And then the priest says, you know, I too have a confession to make. My envelope is also not full. The church's homeless shelter needed a new roof last month. It was going to cost $50,000, and we didn't have it, so I used some of Bill's money. We renamed the shelter after Bill, and it's already helped countless people, and I think he would have wanted it that way. Then it was the politician's turn. And he says, gentlemen, I'm ashamed of you. He said, this was Bill's dying wish. And because of that, my envelope has a check in it for the full amount. If I have to explain that to you. In verse 22 of Ecclesiastes 2, the writer asks, what do people get for all their work and all their struggles? Their work is full of pain and sorrow, and even at night their minds can't rest. Have you ever been in that situation before? He concludes that this is a great disappointment. Later in Ecclesiastes 6, the author mentions another disappointment in regard to life on earth. Verse 2, he says, God gives some people wealth and possessions and honor so that they lack nothing their hearts desire, but God does not grant them the ability to enjoy them. And he goes on to say, what good is it to have a large family and all kinds of possessions if you can't enjoy them? According to an article in the Wall Street Journal back in March of 2011, a study portrays the ultra-rich as souls, lost souls, burdened by the fears and worries of and family distortions of too much money. According to this article, the respondents turn out to be generally a generally dissatisfied lot whose money has contributed to deep anxieties involving love and work and family. And they're frequently dissatisfied even with their sizable fortunes. For that, they say they would, in order for them to consider themselves financially secure, it says they would require on average one quarter more wealth than they currently possess. So this kind of echoes what the author of Ecclesiastes is saying. What is the good of all this wealth if you're just going to be miserable? If you can't enjoy it? It proves that wealth is not the answer to a more enjoyable life. In fact, it causes that illness called affluenza. I don't have to explain that one to you, do I, either? That the author mentions another disappointment which has to do with the unpredictability of life. Max just read it in Ecclesiastes. Chapter 9, 11 and 12. I also saw something else here on earth. The fastest runner doesn't always win the race. The strongest soldier doesn't always win the battle. The wisest does not always have food. The smartest doesn't always become wealthy. And the talented one doesn't always receive the praise. Time and chance happen to everyone. No one knows what's going to happen next. Like a fish caught in a net or a bird caught in a trap, people are trapped by evil when it suddenly falls on them. In other words, life doesn't follow a script. You never know for sure what's going to happen. Like when your flight is delayed and you miss your connection. Or when you got the flu shot and you still got the flu. Or like last summer. Last summer at the Ohio State Fair, if you recall, some people went to the fair to have a good time, ride rides. A ride malfunctioned and somebody died. Several people were seriously injured. You can do everything you're supposed to do and do it right, and it does not guarantee that something won't go wrong. In our minds, good things should happen to good people and bad things should happen to bad people. That's the way, in our minds, life should be scripted. But it doesn't always work out that way because life is unpredictable. Even Job subscribed to that thinking. He said in chapter 21, verse 17, "How often are the lamps of the evil people turned off? How often does trouble come to them? How often do they suffer God's angry punishment? How often are they like straw in the wind or chaff that's blown away by a storm?" It's said that God saves up a person's punishment for his children. But God should punish the wicked themselves so they'll know it. Their eyes should see their own destruction and they should suffer the anger of the Almighty. So in Job's mind, the good should be rewarded and the bad should be punished in life. We pretty much all agree with that. In fact, we all do the same thing, sort of. When we go through rough times, we have a tendency to think the same way. We wonder why our neighbor who's been divorced and remarried three times and lets his dog poop in our yard, that why he's not having problems. Why am I having problems? There are lots of books. The libraries are filled with books written on why bad things happen to good people, because it doesn't fit our model. The truth is, bad things don't just happen to good people, they happen to everyone. I read recently, or heard on the news, maybe you did too, about a guy who wanted to break into this house for some reason, but he didn't want to break a window, or he didn't want to, try to kick in a door, so he thought he was being really smart, he'd go through the chimney. And of course, you know what happened. He got stuck. Now, fortunately, he had his cell phone with him, and so he called for help, and they came and got him, and then he was arrested for trying to break into the house. My son, who's a police officer, that I've told you that before, he's got a lot of stories about bad things happening to bad people. Everyone is subject to bad things happening to them in this world because we live in a fallen world. And so with all of these disappointments that we experience, and I know many of you have already experienced a lot of disappointments in your life, I have too. With all of these disappointments, is it better to live by Benjamin Franklin's belief that you should just live your life expecting that the worst is going to happen, and that way it lessens the impact of the disappointment? Well, I think what the author of Ecclesiastes is trying to convey to us is not to go through life thinking that if you do everything you're supposed to do, if you do everything by the book, life will never disappoint you. The truth is, you will experience many disappointments in life, no matter how well you live, no matter how good or righteous you are. But that doesn't mean life isn't good. That doesn't mean you can't enjoy life. Because there's kind of a silver lining to the disappointments in life. The silver lining is that you learn more from your mistakes and from your disappointments than your successes or triumphs. In chapter 7, the author wrote, "It's better to go to a funeral than to a party. We all must die. And everyone living should think about this. Sorrow is better than laughter, and sadness has a good influence on you. A wise person thinks about death, but a fool thinks only about having a good time." Now, that might sound kind of depressing or morbid, but what he means is that, sadness from disappointment can help you reevaluate your life situation or your activities such that it brings about a change for the better. It makes you think about what you're doing. It makes you, it helps you become a little more serious or sober about life and the end of life, and remind you what is important. Paul knew this. Romans chapter 5, verses 3 through 5, when he informed his audience about joy in the midst of troubles, he wrote, this is Paul, knowing what all he went through, we also have joy with our troubles, because we know that these troubles produce patience, and patience produces character, and character produces hope. And this hope will never disappoint us, because God has poured out His love to fill our hearts. When you endure the bad times and you develop patience, you develop perseverance, which he says builds character. And the word translated character is actually a word that means tested. As you patiently endure trials, you're being tested. And when you succeed in enduring the trials, you've been tested. You've passed the test. Therefore, you become a person of higher or stronger character. And this character, he says, this testing produces a hope. And James, I think, explained what the hope is in chapter 1, verse 12. He said, blessed is the man who remains steadfast under trial. For when he has stood the test, he will receive the crown of life, which God has promised to those who love him. So this is the one thing, this is the only thing in life that will never disappoint you. It is the love of God that has been given to you through His Spirit. It is His promise to you that through your faith, you'll be rewarded. You just kind of got to hang in there. So unless your hope is in this life only, I would not recommend living your life according to Benjamin Franklin's motto. To expect the worst and have such a negative attitude to me would be a very discouraging way to live your life. You know, not only that, but I don't think many people would want to spend a lot of time with you if you had that attitude. You know, I'd rather be around somebody who's optimistic, who's cheerful, who's encouraging, rather than someone who constantly complains and is doom and gloom all the time. Who wants to be around someone like that? Instead, maybe it'd be better to adopt Charles Krauthammer's motto. He's a syndicated columnist and opinion writer. He says, the joy of losing consists in this, where there are no expectations, there's no disappointment. So maybe we just expect too much. Maybe we expect life to follow a script, and life doesn't. So live your life. Live your life recognizing there's a lot of joy. There's a lot to enjoy in this life. Ecclesiastes 11:8. Here's what the writer of Ecclesiastes, who wrote all those discouraging points in Ecclesiastes, he said, people ought to enjoy every day of their lives, no matter how long they live. That's the attitude. He saw all, he had experienced all this disappointment in life, and that's what he came to understand. Enjoy every day. It's a gift. Have you seen the Life is Good line of clothing? Some of you may have, some of you may have. And it just encourages a positive attitude about life. So, recognize that in this life, there's going to be a lot of disappointment. And I know all of you, many of you in here have already experienced it, because life doesn't always work out the way you would like it to. And it doesn't just happen to you, it happens to everyone. Sometimes we think it's only happening to us, but it's not true. Recognize that disappointments will occur, and they can work in your favor when you patiently endure them. They help you become a person of character, which gives you hope of spending eternity with God. Life is unpredictable. There's going to be a lot of surprises. There haven't been already. There's going to be a lot of setbacks. There's going to be a lot of successes. The author of Ecclesiastes in chapter 11, verse 4, encourages you not to wait for perfect weather to plant your seeds or to harvest your crops. Now, I know there aren't a lot of farmers in here, but in other words, if you wait till circumstances are just right before you go ahead with your plans, you'll never do anything. So live life to the fullest. Be positive, and whatever happens, happens. Take the good with the bad. Enjoy each day as it comes. You don't have to live your life according to Benjamin Franklin's philosophy. In fact, I think you'll enjoy life more when you understand that life does have its disappointments. But for the most part, like we said, life is good. And you can find joy even in disappointment. As Paul explained to the Corinthians, 2 Corinthians 4:16, this is one of my favorite couple of verses, for our light and momentary troubles. That's how Paul described them, the troubles in his life. Light and momentary are achieving for us an eternal glory that far outweighs them all. So we fix our eyes not on what is seen, but on what is unseen. Because what is seen is temporary. What is unseen is forever. So are you focusing your life on the eternal, or are you solely focused on the here and now? I hope it's focused on the eternal. As Paul explained in 1 Corinthians 15:19, if our hope's in Christ for this life only, we should be pitied more than anyone else in the world. Take a look at your communication card. There's some next steps for this week. There's a verse to memorize, some verses to read, and a challenge to accept. And the challenge is, be optimistic. Cultivate an attitude of optimism. Live your life with a positive outlook. You know, if you just stop to think about life, life is good. And life through Christ is going to be, oh my, better than good. You're a child of God. You have a great deal about which to be optimistic. So I hope you'll take the challenge. The Lord wants to put His loving Spirit in you, if He hasn't already, so that you'll have His help and His assurance that when life disappoints you, you'll know that there's better times ahead. He wants to make you a better person. He wants to make you a stronger person. He wants to be reconciled to you, but you have to decide whether or not you want to be reconciled to Him. And so we're going to give you a few minutes right now to make that decision. Do you want to be reconciled to God, or do you want to be separated from Him forever? It's a pretty important decision in life. And I hope if you haven't made it yet, you'll consider it today. As Robin leads us in the song, as we sing, God wants to be reconciled to you. What about you? I encourage you now as we stand, as we sing.
Come thou fountain.